Coming up on today's edition of Grape Encounters.
Here what we do is we have one signature cupcake that comes back every single week. It's basically our Big Mac of cupcakes. It's a chocolate blackberry Syrah.
Oh my gosh, this is beyond good.
It is.
And the real brains behind the operation is the missus, right?
That is my wife. She is the mad scientist baker, yeah.
She'll build it.
Yeah.
You'll try it.
Right.
And if it doesn't pass muster, doesn't make it.
Yeah, we talk about it. That's right. Yeah.
Now, have there ever been times where she's just been a little irritated with you for not approving a cupcake?
Every time.
Is that right?
Yeah, but, so but we talk through it and, you know.
Plus, a little later on today's show.
So on the label is my grandparents' actual wedding photo. And we have a organically grown Cabernet Sauvignon that smelled like, I don't know how I describe it other than it smelled like the neck of a woman. And when we, yeah, I know.
That little spot right here.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, you know, spot. Every.
This is where you put the perfume,
that's right.
Right? Yeah.
Actually, I think that's an important place. I mean, when I hugged my wife the first time, I'll never forget that smell. I knew I loved her.
Now, do you ever dab a little Syrah onto that spot?
Well, never.
You never have?
Never, no.
That's going to be your assignment tonight.
Thank
when
you.
Go.
I will work diligently upon that.
Whether you're crazy about Chardonnays, captivated by cabs, partial to Pinots, or seduced by Syrahs, one thing is certain. There's a lot to love about wine. But it's not simply about the taste. A good glass of wine starts with a dream, is born in a vineyard, and is babied all the way to the bottle. Join Grape Encounters as we visit the vineyards and tasting rooms of the Central Coast. We'll show you where to find imaginative cuisine, cozy accommodations, hidden treasures, and a host of unforgettable adventures. If you're unpretentious, fun-loving, and adventurous, stick around. The fun begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning and welcome to Grape Encounters. We are very, very happy to have you here this morning. We're very happy to be at Sarlo's & Sons Family Winery. This is, without a doubt, one of the coolest tasting rooms that you will ever go to, and I am not overselling this. We are in Los Olivos, and this tasting room opened up a couple of months ago. I was so lucky to come to the grand opening, which was a feast beyond your wildest dreams. It was so good. And you know what's so interesting about this wine tasting room is it's the least snobby wine tasting room that you will ever walk into. It is just so family, so warm and cozy. But the first thing that hits you when you come through the door is the fact that they have this fantastic case of cupcakes there that I don't even know how to describe them. Cupcake is not a fair word because cupcake sort of intimates something that you pour a mix out of a box and you create this thing that you take to your kid's kindergarten class or whatever. These are definitely adult cupcakes. And so before we get into the wines and we talk to the proprietors here at Sarlo's and Sons, we have dragged over the chief executive cupcake taster. He's the CET, chief executive taster, Kevin Ray Vandervliet. Kevin, thank you for being on Grape Encounters.
Thank you for having me.
It's very strange that our very first show that we would start talking about cupcakes and not wine, but I guess that's a great way to clean your palate. Is that the whole idea of the cupcake concession?
A big part of being in Los Olivos is wine, and a big part of our cupcakes include wine, whether they're either made with wine or they're paired with the Sarlo's & Sons wine tasting experience. So, yeah.
So your company is Enjoy Cupcakes.
It is.
And the real brains behind the operation is the missus, right?
That is my wife. She is the mad scientist baker, yeah.
Now, that's a great description, but what does that exactly mean in a tale?
To watch her bake, it's fascinating. It's like watching an artist work on a painting. She doesn't use recipes. She does all of this out of her head. She creates new flavors by just seeing different body lotions, by surfing the internet, by...
So Let me clarify. So are there body lotions in the
cupcakes?
There
are no body lotions in the cupcakes.
All right. Now, I'm looking at, you brought a platter of cupcakes out here, and I am looking at, they're all very different. They are beautiful, by the way. A work of art. Now, you said she doesn't use recipes, so how is she able to replicate the cupcakes from one day to the next?
It's in her head.
And are you serious?
So it's in
her
head.
There could be some variations. So she has vintages of cupcakes then.
Well, here what we do is we have one signature cupcake that comes back every single week. It's basically our Big Mac of cupcakes. It's a chocolate blackberry Syrah.
That's this one over
that's
here.
That's that one with the blackberry on the top.
Now, is it okay if I actually taste that while we're
taste
doing that?
It.
This is like all really right. Super dark, by the way.
Yeah, that's something that Amber really loved about this cupcake is the cake batter is almost black. It's a very, very dark purple.
And she actually creates the batter herself.
Creates every
single
thing.
She's not using any, no mixes.
Nothing.
No Pillsbury.
Nothing. When we put caramel in some of our caramels, she makes the caramel from scratch. I've tried it twice.
Oh my gosh.
I failed twice.
All right. I don't even know what I'm eating here. There's like a blackberry on top.
Yeah.
And then there's this like sort of pinkish cream something or other.
Yep.
How would you describe
that?
Well,
let me tell you, it's a chocolate
cake. Oh my gosh, this is beyond good.
It's a chocolate cake baked with Syrah, it's then cored out, and there's a homemade Belgian fudge inside. Then the berry is soaked overnight in Syrah, rolled in sugar crystals. And the color that you're seeing in the frosting is her reducing down the blackberries and using the reduction in the frosting to get that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you said that she was a baking apprentice before...
Basically, yep.
Before you did this.
I've been with her 10 years, and for 10 years, I pretty much had no idea she could bake.
I can't talk. I got a mouthful. What else do we have here?
Well, every week, the other five flavors rotate. So she's always creating and coming up with new flavors. We're rotating flavors that people really like and ask for. But today, what we have is we have a strawberry lemonade. We have a best of both worlds, which is a chocolate and vanilla. It has a vanilla pudding in it. We have a Chardonnay mascarpone vanilla bean. So it's got a mascarpone mousse inside. We've got a chocolate caramel toffee. And then we have a French toast, which has a maple pudding inside and then a dusting of cinnamon.
French toast.
French toast.
I don't think I've ever heard of that. Now, gourmet cupcakes are really the rage right now. There are some other companies that are doing it.
Yeah.
And they have lines down the block sometimes.
That's what they tell us.
And, well, you guys are incredibly popular. When I was here last, the cupcakes were gone.
Yeah, we're selling out now on the weekends pretty regularly, and pretty much every day we're open. So,
if you're just joining us, it's David Wilson with Grape Encounters of the Wine Kind, but actually it's Grape Encounters of the Cupcake Kind. We are at Sarlo's and Sons Winery, really their tasting room in Los Olivos, the most incredible tasting room. There's a crowd that's starting to build here, and we have cornered Kevin Ray Vandervliet, who is the chief executive taster for he and his wife's company, which is called Enjoy Cupcakes, right?
Correct, and her middle name is Joy, so that's kind of where the name also originated from.
Enjoy Cupcakes. Yeah. Now, whose idea was the business?
It was her idea to start it. She's always wanted to own a bakery her entire life, and so once she saw the trailer, said, I want to sell cupcakes out of them. She then talked to me about them. She started making cupcakes. I looked at her and I just said, are you kidding me?
Okay, you got to tell me about the trailers because you have a trailer that's sitting out front. It's so cool.
It's an old canned ham trailer. It's a 1964 fully restored Shasta Aeroflight trailer. And what we use it for is we go around to different weddings, parties, bridal showers, baby showers, anything that somebody wants. We bring the cupcakery to you. It has awnings, lights. We service out of it.
Wait, it's called a cupcakery.
Is that
your own term?
Well, a cupcakery is kind of a common term
for
cupcake shops that are doing the baking, yeah.
So what is it that makes cupcakes so appealing these days? I guess it's reliving your childhood, but with an adult flair. You said this is a Syrah cupcake that I just had,
that
right?
That one is, yeah. But we definitely continue to have flavors every week that kids can come in and really enjoy as well.
So what are the kids like?
You know what? They're always going to go for the more simplistic flavors, honestly. Your strawberries, your peanut butters, your vanillas, your chocolates, more basic because their palates probably haven't quite got there. That's really the interesting thing about the whole cupcake kind of trend you were talking about is that cupcakes are now almost being more purchased, I would say, by adults these days than they are for children anymore. It's kind of taken a different type of leap.
Well, it certainly is an interesting phenomenon. It's definitely the rage. It's the rage here in Los Olivos. Now, you just sell here at this wine tasting room.
We sell at the tasting room, and we do
weddings
and parties.
And how's that been going? I mean, it's been a couple of months now, right?
It's been amazing. It's been amazing.
And you sell out all the time?
We sell out regularly, yes.
And you're preparing more and more of these all the time, and now you're really getting into high season here in Los Olivos.
Yep.
Now, are you a wine guy as well?
I was not a wine guy until I moved up here, and I have to tell you, now being here and tasting different wines, I'm starting to develop a bit of a palate for it, so yeah.
Now, do people actually pair the cupcakes with the wine?
That is a very big thing that people do here. What we do is we know the wines here, and we know the flavors of our cupcakes that we create every week, and then what we do is we pair them with a different wine so that as you're going through the experience, you will have a different cupcake with a different wine specifically paired for the tasting.
Now, to kind of set the stage, if you go outside, at the front of the tasting room, not in the back, but before you even get into the tasting room, there's a great patio.
Yeah.
I mean,
amazing.
it's like the kind of patio you want at your house.
You know, people come to and they see that patio and they feel like they're coming to a friend's
and
party.
And so they actually, can they sit out there and eat cupcakes and drink wine?
Yep.
So So that is maybe the coolest experience ever. And you know what's really interesting? It's not just a patio. It's like kind of got indoor furniture outdoors. It's very cushy and very plush. These are not benches, right?
Did you notice the chairs even have little cuts on the sides?
I know.
For
I
your
saw that.
Glass.
I looked at that at first, and I didn't really at first connect with what that was, and then I realized it's what it is. It's got a little slit and then a hole,
right?
So that the neck of your, or the stem rather, of your wine glass can slip in there, and you can just set it down there.
Exactly,
and then you can that way you can keep your cupcakes on your lap. So, most exotic cupcake Joy has ever made.
Wow, the most exotic one. I'm gonna have to say, you know, exotic. We've done a salted pretzel where she ground up pretzel on the base, then put the batter in, and then we had a caramel inside and then chopped up pretzels. So actually you get the salt with the sweet. There have been a lot that we've tried and are not happy with that are
They don't make it to the tasting room.
I've got to clear it.
All right, this is an interesting point then, is she'll build it, you'll try it,
right.
And if it doesn't pass muster, doesn't make it.
Yeah, we talk about it. That's right. Yeah.
Now, have there ever been times where she's just been a little irritated with you for not approving a cupcake?
Every time.
Is that right?
Yeah, but we talk through it, and you know.
You do get through it. So I want to go back just one more second to the trailers.
Yeah.
So when I was here at the grand opening, you had a whole line of these vintage trailers.
Right.
And those are, I mean, is that something, are there trailer clubs, are there collectors of these things?
Actually, there's, I'm not sure who it is locally, but she actually rents trailers, so she can bring them out, and you could actually rent them, I believe, and take them camping, and she'll deliver them for you, and they're all old vintage 60s trailers, and they're very well kept up, too.
There are people that actually restore these.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the blue one out there is yours, though.
That one is ours, yes.
And that goes to every event that you go to. Now, you get invited to a lot of events. Is that the case?
We've been doing a lot. Some of the other wineries we've worked with for cupcakes, and we brought trailers to some farmers markets and different things like that. So yeah.
Now you said you're fairly new to the area. You came from Ventura. You've been bopping around. I think you said the Bay Area as well.
Bay Area, Santa Barbara, Ventura, and this is going to be our last place. We have a 2-year-old daughter, so this is just where we
love
it here.
You've been living in all the cool places. So let me just say, the company is Enjoy Cupcakes, and I don't mind giving a plug to this company. You can go to www.enjoycupcakes.com. That's the website, right?
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm not going to give you a phone number because nobody's going to write it down or remember it anyway, but it's enjoycupcakes.com. Couldn't be easier. Lucky to get
that
web address, by the way. And you come to Sarlo's and Sons in Los Olivos, and it's easy to find. Can you give them directions?
It's 2971 Grand Avenue in Los Olivos, California. Basically, it's so simple. You get right off of the 154, and it's going to be the first big vintage 100-year-old house on the right-hand side. You won't miss it. And also the trailer's there.
This place is 100 years old, huh?
It is a little over 100
years old.
I love
the fixtures and the knobs in here, the glass doorknobs and, you know.
Well, Heather Keith's wife, both of them, but Heather's a designer by trade, and you can just look around and know that the quality is, you know.
I'm telling you, we're reaching largely people who are out in their cars, and they're wandering about and getting lost on back roads in the valley here, looking for tasting experiences. But this place goes so much more beyond the regular tasting experience. For one thing, there's a lot of room in here, which is nice, and you're not jammed in.
Yeah.
Secondly, you've got this fabulous patio and ambiance. You can just come and hang out for a while.
You know, people come in and they feel like they've just come to someone's party. And, you know, that's the thing about some tasting rooms, is they don't have the experience and that feeling when you come in. When you do come here, you're going to leave going, that was fun. There was music there. There were people I met. There was a nice vibe. All the people that work here are awesome, and it's just a different type of tasting.
You know what's like cool is, like, there's cool music on the stereo.
Yeah.
There's just snobbery is not allowed here, as far as I can see. It's a very hip, cool place.
Keith might politely ask you to leave if you're too big of a snob.
If you're too big of a snob.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what we're all about, is that, you know, we want to talk about the fun side, not just of wine and all the things that surround wine, but, you know, it's just, if you like it, you like it. That's
right.
It.
That's right.
And no amount of snobbery and talking about the wine is going to make somebody like something
that's
that
right.
they do
you
not
know,
like.
It's all about your individual tastes. What do you like? What works for you? And, you know, snobs, not even saying anybody really is, but, you know, some people believe that their palate is better, and that's just not what we're about. We're about, if you like it, you like it, and if you don't, that's fine too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I so appreciate you being here, Kevin. It is, you know what's the coolest thing right now?
Yeah.
I have to tell you that somebody just walked in. I see a face across the room that I have not seen in 33 years, and it is just as cute and beautiful as it used to be. Can you believe that?
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I am going to I'm going to say goodbye to you right at the moment,
yeah.
And we will be back.
Let's
we're
going to
be back in
tasting.
A few weeks, and we'll do that. We're going to do a little wine tasting. We're going to drag Keith over here next, who's really the brains behind the operation. At least that's what he told me he is, and we're going to drag him to the mic, and I'm going to have one more cupcake before we do that.
Have the rest of the five if you'd like.
Oh, no. That's I'm trying to get into a size 6.
Well, share with your friend.
I'll do it.
All right.
All right. Thanks very
thanks,
much.
Buddy.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, so if you think cupcakes was exciting, we're going on to a very, very exciting chapter of this visit today. We are at Sarlo's and Sons, the tasting room in Los Olivos. And I just want to tell you that on my birthday back in May, I wandered into this place. They were having their grand opening. I drove by. There was food, free food out there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And free food definitely gets my attention. And I came into this tasting room. I had never heard of the wines. And I will tell you, they are among the best wines I have ever dumped down my throat. I mean,
thank
absolutely
wow.
Fantastic. Fantastic, but not just great wines, but one of the best tasting rooms you will ever walk into in this valley, in Paso Robles, in Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino. I don't care. This is one of the best tasting rooms on the planet. In fact, we can just throw Italy and France in there if you'd like to as well.
Oh, okay.
It's that good.
We'll let it go.
Now, I have Keith Sarlo's, really, I think it is.
Either way, just
it's
don't
like
call
tomato,
me late for dinner.
Tomato, tomato thing, okay? Because I've heard it three or four different ways. And Keith, you run this joint.
Yeah.
So you guys are a farming family, right?
Absolutely.
And several generations, I think four generations is what I read.
Yes. You know, our family started back, we worked as a family, fathers and sons, for quite a few generations now. We started out in dairy in Sheldon, Iowa, moved to California. Was in dairy supply.
Now, were you born in Iowa?
No,
Iowa,
actually,
you said, right?
I was born in Southern California in Long Beach.
Oh, okay,
and
all right.
When it was Dairy Valley, that's when my grandma.
Now, do you know how to milk a cow?
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay,
yeah,
all right. Because
yeah,
there's nothing more fun than that.
That well,
especially
you know,
as a kid.
I have lots of cousins who can milk a lot better than I can.
Okay, all right. So started in dairy farming. When did the family come to this valley?
You know, we moved to the valley about 13 years ago now, and it was a dream of my grandfather's. If you ever went into his workshop. There was an old calendar that the top picture was cut off of, and it said Sarlo's Dream Ranch, and it was written in his handwriting. And my father always shared his father's dream, so to speak, and wanted to move away from Southern California. And we've always been huge on community, and this place is community, 100%.
Oh, it's got such a sense of community, and they're just, I mean, the parades, for instance, that they have in the towns here are like what you would have expected back in Mark Twain days, you know?
And that is the character
so
of this place.
So flavorful.
Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, it's David Wilson with Grape Encounters. It was of the cupcake kind, but now it's of the wine kind. And we have Keith Sarlo's in here of Sarlo's and Sons in Los Olivos. We are at the tasting room, really one of the best tasting rooms around, and we're just getting into it. There are at least three glasses of wine stacked up in front of me, and I'm so excited about that, Keith. But you guys started, you had property on Ballard Canyon.
That's correct. We purchased a piece of property that had an apple orchard on it.
17 acres.
Which
isn't a lot of acreage, but...
You know, not really, but if you've ever been to the property, it's really unique. It has a terraced vineyard, or a terraced orchard when we first started out. It was Fuji apples. We got our first crop of Fuji apples, and they were terrible. Terrible to the point where if it was grapes, they would have been excellent.
Okay, all right.
Well, it's just high stress.
High stress.
Okay. The vineyard's the only vineyard on the eastern slope of a western-facing sun on the entire canyon, and we tore out the orchard and started planting grapes on the terraces. Found some people who would take a risk on us.
Now, how long ago was that?
That was 12 years ago.
Well, when you got the property?
Yeah. Right. We had 1 year.
Oh, so
orchard.
When you brought the property, it already had the Fuji apples there.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And we tore it all out and started planting vines and reading a lot of books and asking a lot of questions, because the one beautiful part about this valley is people, you know, we are quote-unquote, competition really isn't the word, but people want to see people succeed. And you ask a lot of questions of people, and they'll tell you the truth. And with a lot of help with a lot of friends, got the vineyard up and running and started selling grapes to them.
Well, the more people that are making great wines in the valley,
the more it brings
people here. It's like if you go through Solvang and it's Danish pastry after Danish pastry, it puts you in a Danish pastry frame of mind, I think, right?
I totally agree.
And if they only had one pastry shop, probably they wouldn't do much of a business. But the fact that they got umpteen gazillion shops, everybody eats pastries there and they sell out every night.
Absolutely.
Except they don't have cupcakes there, and you guys have these cool gourmet cupcakes, which... I had the one made with Syrah, by the way, and a blackberry on top. Have you had that one?
Oh, I've had it a few times. That is the signature.
That's the one, right?
Yeah, it's soaked in Syrah overnight. It's a perfect pairing. We actually do a wine pairing. So when you come in and you do tasting, and part of being, you know, the unpretentious aspect of what we do, or just family, we want this place to feel like when you come in, you're visiting a friend's home. And when you have a glass of wine with your friends, you usually have something to eat along with it, and why not be the world's greatest cupcake along with what we hope are some really good wines.
So talk to me about this first wine here. Sure. Is this a Chardonnay?
Yeah, it's our daughter Chardonnay. It's a bit of an anti-Chardonnay.
Your daughter makes a Chardonnay?
Well,
I know. It's called the daughter Chardonnay,
daughter's
right?
Possessive. Oh, yeah. Possessive, actually.
Okay, daughter's Chardonnay.
That's
okay.
Correct. What we wanted to do with this wine is the girls in our family, we have had six generations of boys. And my cousin Erica is the first girl in quite a few generations.
Six generations?
Of boys.
And no girls?
That's right.
In that whole time?
Right.
Wow, the very macho family.
I know.
Okay.
All right. And from there, my grandfather always said, I have no daughter-in-laws, I only have daughters. So this wine truly belongs to them. They love white wine, but they couldn't find exactly what they wanted. And our desire with this wine was to blend a few different vineyards around the valley to create a kind of a harmonious wine that tastes like no Chardonnay anybody really has ever tasted. Basically, we made a champagne without carbonation, or a sparkling wine without... Well, that was kind of the goal. It was really kind of the goal. We wanted something that you could drink when it's cold outside and you get under a blanket with someone you love and watch a good movie.
And what year is this that I'm drinking? And
oh, I'm sorry. This is a 2007.
2007. So this is really pretty brand new.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's going through changes, which is really fun.
It is really a nice drinkable wine. And this,
good to go.
Nice and cold on this wine too, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and oak?
There are
just a little bit, right?
Going back to how we made it three different ways, and then we had all the girls in our family. We call it the optometrist, and we kept looking at different vineyards, different tastes, until we finally found the one we wanted, and hence daughter Chardonnay. So it does have some oak on it. It has some stainless steel. Made a myriad of different ways, and then blended together.
But very like very easy on the oak.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And you know what? And I hate over oak Chardonnays. They especially in the summertime.
I would totally agree. I think it should be more Chablis than anything else.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a question.
Sure.
The Chardonnay is coming from other vineyards.
Absolutely. Yes.
Not just your own. Is that true with all your wines or
no?
Just some of them.
Just some of them.
Okay.
A lot of our vineyards, because we are, you know, because we are growers first and foremost, and we sell 99.95% of the crop we grow to other people. We are very fortunate that we think of ourselves in the vineyard as songwriters, and we sell our grapes to people who in turn interpret or sing our songs.
That's one of the better metaphors I've ever heard.
That's
beautiful.
Well, it's, you know, when you're working in the vineyard, you're putting your heart and soul into it.
You paint with grapes.
You're painting with grapes. And we always wanted to be a paint maker to the point where when we got the opportunity, we started making our own wine just for ourselves and friends and family.
Yeah, that's what I wondered. This was all for your own private consumption.
Oh yeah,
right?
Absolutely. We just, to be honest, we have no, if we use the song metaphor again, you know, we have no desire to be worldwide known and sell out, you know, the Hollywood Bowl. We just want to sing our own songs in our own little tasting room.
So you're going to play small clubs?
No, we're just going to play our own bar.
Play your own bar. Okay. And you've got 17 acres, so you're probably getting, what, 130 or 40 cases off an acre, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
So that means very limited production, and you have no desire to go beyond that?
No, not really. We did purchase another vineyard a few years ago from a local historic family, and we've torn most of that vineyard out and replanted all of it right on 101, 154, and Zaka Station Road. And we planted a few different varietals there that we're kind of growing into.
Now,
as well.
It's going to be really interesting to check back with you in a few years and see how much you've succumbed to pressure and grown this operation. Because I truly believe this. You're making some of the best wines I have ever tasted, certainly in this valley, and some of the best wines in the state, which is saying a lot. I mean, we sat at the bar, and I must say it was our first tasting of the day, so it was not impaired by any prior tastings. And I was just shaking my head going, oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
This is so crazy good.
Well, we don't do any of this in a vacuum. We, like I said, how we started our vineyard, we asked a lot of questions of a lot of friends. We still have a lot of friends giving us tons of input. When we get down to the like final blends, you know, it's mostly family sitting around, but I could never say we did this by ourselves.
Now, were you a wine guy before you came here, or you learned it here on the property? Well, you were pretty young, because you're not an old guy.
No, not too old.
No gray hair. Yeah.
I became a bit of a wine guy by proxy with my father. Since we've always kind of worked together as a family, we always say that every generation seems to build their lives using their father's tools. And when my father purchased that piece of property, though it is his 100%, it's ours as a family. And we make decisions based upon being a family. When we tore it out, and I moved up here full-time a few years ago to raise my kids, to be honest.
Where did you come from?
I grew up in Long Beach,
California. Oh, yeah, you stayed there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. When I moved up full-time, one of the questions I asked my father, what do you want to do the rest of your life? And he said, I want to farm. And I want to farm this vineyard, and I want to do that. And he took care of me the first, you know, 20, 25 years of my life. I'm going to take care of the rest of his. And so my goal is to have him grow exactly what he wants, as well as he wants, for us to take it from the ground, put it into a glass, and keep him farming for
now,
the rest
of his
life.
Now, did Dad make wine at home? Did any
no,
bathtub
not really.
Wines? Nobody
no.
made wine.
No, you know, our first vintage, Ken Brown. Ken Brown took our grapes.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and can't say thank you to that guy enough.
Is he still with you?
No. Ken, you know, he did it for 1 year, and it was kind of helping out. And
so who's the winemaker now?
Well, we
is this still a collaborative family effort?
It's totally collaborative family. We have a lot of friends that weigh in on all of our decisions. I get that question a lot, who's the winemaker? And the truth of the matter is, like I said, we don't do anything in the vacuum.
So there isn't one designated person who's calling all the shots. You guys wander through the winery with glasses, and you do a lot of green tasting and a lot of cogitating and deciding as to what's going to happen next?
I guess the off-the-record aspect of it is, I've got a lot of friends who I would say are the best winemakers in the world.
And, really?
Oh, absolutely.
God,
and
I want friends like that.
And
I'll
bring them tastes or samples of what we're doing, or sometimes they're customers. Sometimes they're just people we swap bottles with, and their input is huge.
But it's one thing to know what you want and know what you want to create, and it's quite another thing to have the grapes, the technology, the know-how to do that. So, I mean, I don't understand how 12 years ago you plant grapes and you suddenly start making these absolutely breathtaking wines. It's not an accident, and it's great that everybody gave you their input, but there's some real major know-how there that's going on.
I guess the best way I can describe it is one of the people I probably respect most in winemaking, Bob Lindquist, said a long time ago, you can make bad wine from bad grapes. You can make bad wine from great grapes. But the only way you can make a truly spectacular wine is to start with a truly spectacular grape. And in our passion, our pursuit is to have the winemaking take place in the vineyard, to make wine from it and get out of the way and don't screw it up.
That had to be a very interesting thought process when you tore out the Fujis.
Absolutely.
And you decided you were going to plant grapes. I mean, who did you ask for advice in doing that?
You know, one of the biggest things was being a grower and not a winemaker. We asked people who we hoped would buy our grapes. What do you think we should plant? And would you drive by and tell us what you think? And, you know, just like the collaborative effort, that's what we did.
Okay, so let's talk about this wine tasting room for
sure,
a second.
Sure.
Because this place, if you have not been here, and if you're driving in your car right now, you need to haul your buns over to Los Olivos right now and come to the least pretentious wine tasting room in the Santa Ynez Valley, right?
I hope so. I hope we honor our family.
That's a big deal, right? I've heard that you actually throw people out for being too snobby.
To be honest with you, for being too snobby, yeah, because if we have some people that are coming in, you know, wine shouldn't be exclusive. Wine should be inclusive.
Yeah.
You drink wine by opening a bottle with your friends, trying to slow down time. And if people are at the bar and it's someone's first time tasting, or they're just really enjoying themselves, and someone rolls up to the bar and wants to impress the rest of their bar with their knowledge and using terminology that alienates people, that's a snob and they need to leave.
Do you think that there are a lot of people that actually don't go into tasting rooms because they're intimidated? They're afraid that they're not going to know enough about the wines, so they sort of avoid that whole experience?
Most of the people I grew up with, the answer 100% is yes.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to be is a place where, you know, this we call this place house. We wanted it to be, when you walk through the door, you feel like you're greeted by a friend and you talk about wine. And wine should be something that when you consume it, You feel like you had an experience.
And instead of the little dry biscuits, you have cupcakes.
Oh, yeah.
You probably have the little dry biscuits, too, right?
No, we don't.
You don't even do that.
Why?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because you're never going to have people over and serve little dry, stale crackers, right?
Absolutely.
Cupcakes. I can buy a cupcake and I can sit out on the patio, right? And
our bond goes right to the street. We've owned the building for a while, and you can enjoy your wine sitting out.
Can I bring a book and sit out there?
Oh, yeah.
No
kidding.
Please
come on in.
So like a Barnes & Noble of wine tasting.
This is our home.
Yeah, so you spend a lot of time here.
I spend most of my time here, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the next wine. The reds are there,
sure.
And I already know what to expect, but it's been a couple of months, and I actually brought my checkbook with me today, my credit cards.
Great. We'll keep the lights on.
So what's this first one that we have here?
Our first red that we have, it's a Syrah. It's called Purple Heart, and Purple Heart. Is Purple Heart written in Dutch. And this wine, as we were growing it, as it was going through fermentation, it really reminded us of a family member of ours, which is my great uncle John, who died 14 days after the invasion of Normandy. He's a big hero in our family. My grandfather talked about him so much, I feel like I know the guy. And to be honest with you, my grandfather took the picture that's on the front of our label.
And I love there's in the tasting book, they have a tasting book. It's not like...
Oh, you can download, by the way, you can go right to our website. You can download that whole book.
This is the coolest thing, and you won't see this too often. Instead of a typed up piece of paper and a plastic, jacket from Office Depot, they have a hardbound book, which is the tasting book. And then it has some great vintage photographs of family members and some very poetic stuff. I don't know if you wrote this or somebody else.
I wrote it, but please do not try to proofread. I am a terrible speller.
The Purple Heart is the family creed, which is we live to honor those who have come before us and to prepare the way for those yet to come.
That is who we are.
So are there any little ones in the family?
Oh, yeah. We have quite a few. If you're talking real little ones, I have a daughter, Brielle, who is 4 going on 14, and... knows wine, which is pretty fun.
Okay, so you've actually, she tastes wine like, a European way of raising children.
Well, in America, not to get political for a second, but
that's okay, you can.
We eat to be full, and we drink to consume. And how we're trying to raise our daughter is to eat for experience and to taste for experience so that she can put that kind of back in her memory bank a little bit and remember things that she hasn't tasted before, what something smells like, or... rather than, eating meatloaf Wednesdays, we kind of try to mix it up a little bit. And if my daughter dips her finger into wine so she knows what a Syrah tastes like, different from a Petit Verdot, separate from
Can she tell the difference at 4 years old?
Oh, yeah.
That is so.
Which I can't teach her another language, but hopefully I can teach her the difference between a few grapes.
So can you teach a good palate, or are you just born with one?
I have no idea. Because when you talk about palate, kind of going back to that, even in the tasting room, we don't tell you what you taste. I don't assume to understand what your favorite meal was when you were a kid growing up.
Yes.
And if you taste our wine and you get a hint of that, and all of a sudden it brings you to a place where you feel warm and at home, then who am I?
I'm actually toasting you for this.
Oh.
Because I so appreciate that attitude.
We're all adults here. We can all make up our own decisions.
And you know what drives me crazy is when you go to a party and somebody, they pull out a $50 or $60 or $80 or $100 bottle of wine, and you've got the person who drinks, the $2 stuff,
sure.
And they like the $2 stuff.
Congratulations.
And that's okay. Some people like Dr. Pepper. I just don't happen to drink it. But if you like it, why force $100 worth of wine onto somebody, right?
Well, and you go to price on that one. The only thing I would say on that is if that winemaker only made 20 cases of it and his heart and soul went into it and it's $100, then by God, that's worth $100. I'll give you that.
Well,
but on the other side of it.
I want to tell you my theory about this. It's not even a theory. My belief about the price of wine is that it is, I have absolutely no objection to wine being expensive because a lot of wines deserve to be very, very expensive. People forget that there might be, 30 or 40 or 50 years into just growing the grapes, and people don't understand how much goes into making a great wine. And I have people say all the time, how could you spend that much for a bottle of wine? Well, because they deserve it. They deserve to be paid for that labor and pampering that. And just the babysitting alone of a bottle of wine over the years, you try hiring a babysitter to watch it and protect it and make sure it doesn't get overheated and make sure that it does,
absolutely.
It's cared for properly.
Well, even touching on that point, You walk into the Louvre or you walk into somewhere, and we could go in with 100 different people and we can all look at the same priceless piece of art. But once you open that bottle of wine to consume it, whoever was there with you at that point, experiencing it with you, that's it. There's no more of that.
Yeah,
each bottle
exactly.
is different. Absolutely. I think winemaking is one of the highest forms of fine art.
I've always been fascinated with the Madeira wines that they make in Spain, because they actually keep some of those wines for hundreds of years.
Oh, yeah.
And they literally have to change barrels from time to time and rebottle them and change corks out. And I mean, and this stuff is literally pampered by generations. And when you open up an old bottle of Madeira, I mean, I've had 300-year-old Madeiras.
What was it like?
You can taste the history, and that's the amazing thing. They used to carry the juice up in what amounted to gigantic Bota bags.
Yeah.
Or not carry it up, but carry it down, because they had the vineyards were up in the hills, and then they would carry it down to where they made the wine down on the coast.
Right.
And so you could actually sort of taste the flavor of, you know, that dead sheep, you know? And it's like you're never going to taste that again in your life. I will bring you a bottle of Madeira.
Oh, thank you.
A great bottle of Madeira.
You know, what we're so lucky that we get to do is we get to work in a vineyard for 365 days a year and stewarding along these little time capsules that are basically, you know, one year of time thrown into a grape skin. We crush it. We hold on to it as long as we can. We put it into a bottle so people can take home and open with their family and you know, to get...
And one mistake and you're dead.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can
That's
run
why
it.
We ask a lot of questions.
So let's talk about this Syrah. This,
yeah.
It's P-U-R-P-E-R, which is Purper Heart,
That's
which
correct.
Means purple heart, right?
That's right, in Dutch.
That's the way my great-grandmother said. Honoring your Uncle John.
Yep.
Is this 100% Syrah?
100%. It all comes from if you ever drive by our vineyard on Ballard Canyon, you'll see the terraces on the hillside, and this all comes from the terraces. We like to call them the brothers because there's two of them. There's one that's a little bigger, which would be me, and one a little more slender, which is my brother.
Okay.
A lot of our customers don't really like that area because it's violently unpredictable. And one of the things I should say about our wine, if you're looking for consistency in wine, we're really not it. All of our labels, once they're gone this year, they're gone forever. And we have all new labels next year and new wines that we've made. So Purper Heart in particular, it's from the heart of our vineyard. It's the first grape we ever planted, which was Syrah. It's a wild, very passionate grape. If you correct it and you're on it, you can stress it to a point where some of the flavors and tastes that come out of it are amazing.
And it's such a great grape for this area, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, this is
you know,
on earth for it.
Syrahs are really have become so incredibly popular. And I remember a time, because I'm older than you, when nobody drank Syrahs. Or very few people did, but it's a great option for the person who was bottle-fed on Cabernets, and then Zinfandels after that. But it's just a beautiful grape, and a great range of flavors that you can get out of Syrahs. That you know, you can be very imaginative with this wine. Can you not?
It's the cobalt blue of painting. You can stretch it into any other color. You can stretch it up and down, and I mean, you can. I've tasted some Syrahs in this valley that are so subtle and soft. That are just beautiful. And I've tasted other Syrahs that, you know, I take a sip of it and I feel like someone punched me in the mouth.
What do you think are the best varietals for this valley?
Wow, that's a pretty tough question. One of the strengths of our valley is there's so many different regions that, I mean, for sake of argument, you can go to stay in like Ballard Canyon where we have some pretty amazing Syrahs and Grenaches and some beautiful Rhones. You can, you know, cruise up around the corner from us and taste some cabs that are amazing. You can Santa Rita Hill and you know, hit Clos Pepe and have some unbelievable Pinot Noir. You can
the geography is very, very.
It's why Lance Armstrong trains here.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
this is
changes
on Earth.
Yeah, and it changes the geography changes very radically from, you know, 1 mile to the next.
You know, we have a couple of vineyards that are, you know, within miles of each other. And one will soar over 101 degrees in a day, and the other one will stay mild.
Yeah.
And then later the next week, it's 100 degrees at the other vineyard, and the other one's mild. And this valley is just, it is truly, truly, truly an amazing place.
If you're just joining us, it's David Wilson with my guest in his wine tasting room, Keith Sarlos of Sarlos & Sons. One of the absolute primo wine tasting rooms. If you're driving around right now, please figure out how to get to Los Olivos. If you're a visitor to the valley, figure out how to get there. Just pull over. The nice people of the Santa Ynez Valley will give you directions and tell them you want to get to Los Olivos and get there right now, because this is definitely a must-visit tasting room in the Valley. If you go, if you taste only one family of wines, it's got to be the Sarlos family. They make wine with a passion, and Keith is here. He's one very, very, very cool guy who loves his wine and loves his wine tasting room. And we are currently drinking or trying the Perber Heart.
That's correct.
100% Syrah, and it is, you know what? It's very decadent, actually. I love this wine. And we've got another red that's lined up behind us. And yeah. What are we moving on to?
Well, we've, in kind of, you know, staying with our family and our and who we are as our creed, our first wine, that Chardonnay, we really described that as the single varietal feminine. The second wine that we tasted was the Perber Heart, and we really described that as the single varietal masculine. The wine we're about to taste is called 1945 The Union. We actually had our grand opening around my grandparents' wedding anniversary. And what we did with this wine is we took a Syrah that we put on neutral oak, we mellowed it out, we relaxed it, and we prepared it for marriage. So on the label is my grandparents' actual wedding photo. And we have a organically grown Cabernet Sauvignon that smelled like I don't know how I describe it other than it smelled like the neck of a woman. And when we and when we blended these two together, it was the masculine and feminine.
I didn't know it was coming, but I didn't
well,
think it was that. Okay.
Well, it's true, but yeah, I know.
That little spot right here.
Right, right exactly. Yeah, yeah, you know, spot. Every...
This is where you put the perfume,
that's right.
Right? Yeah.
You know, when you give a woman a hug and you just kind of...
So this is the natural infuser. Okay.
I got it.
You sidetracked me because I like that spot a lot.
That was a important... Actually, I think that's an important place. I mean, when I hugged my wife the first time, I'll never forget that smell. I knew I loved her.
Now, do you ever dab a little Syrah onto that spot?
Well, never.
You never have?
Never, no,
that's
no.
That's going to be your assignment tonight
Thank
when you,
you
go
I,
home. Okay, try
work,
that out, okay?
I will work diligently upon that.
Okay, we've digressed. It's the 194, the 1945.
Yeah, 1945 is when my grandparents were married. This is two different vineyards, two different families blended together, a cab and a Syrah, which are usually not blended. But when you blend them together, it's kind of like, you know, my wife and I, where she is a beautiful, demure, wonderful woman, and I'm this, you know, barrel-chested loudmouth. And when you put them together, the Syrah and the Cab, they really make something beautiful.
I was going to actually describe you as a Renaissance man.
No. Oh,
but barrel-chested loudmouth is very close. So
actually, I think more people would agree with the barrel-chested loudmouth than the
You know, you can be whatever you want to be. And so
they
come together beautifully. I got to grab this now.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember tasting this back in May, and this wine floored me. Let's see if it still floors me. Hang on.
You know,
talk while I sip,
well,
would you?
I will. Yeah. You know, this is my father's... I don't know if it's his parents on the label.
Great.
Yeah, but this is my father, Larry Sarlos' favorite wine we have.
Now, is Dad's involved quite a lot?
Yeah, you know, we're sitting around the little table that last week we had all of our family here, and we're doing blending panels for our wines for next year. Our whole family's involved. I mean, right now we're sitting here. My cousin Brad is here, my father, my uncle, my aunt, my wife, myself. You'll see my kids
running
around.
You mean right now, that's how many people are from the family are here?
Are hanging out front.
All right, this is absolutely a fantastic wine. So tell me a little bit more about it. You make how many cases of this?
You know, we didn't do very many. We did
287, is that right?
And none of our wines really are over 350. We keep everything really low production just because, you know, you went back to that thing seeing about us succumbing to pressure. Everything from the label we choose to the bottle size we choose to even some of our blends, we don't want to be on a store shelf. We want to look into the eyes of every single person who comes into our tasting room and wants to buy a bottle, because at the end of the day, it makes us better farmers.
And just to make a point about the labels, there are no two labels alike.
No.
Right? Just you make the label for the wine.
Yeah.
And you forget about the branding.
Well, you know, when we were doing the blending panel, I live my life with a Moleskine, which is kind of a writing book. Hemingway used them. That's probably why I like it.
See, I told you Renaissance, man.
Yeah, well,
that's exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And
yeah, I live kind of like Hemingway,
but
I'm a barrel-chested, loudmouth winemaker. Yes,
go.
Okay, go ahead.
We keep journals just kind of each one of our varietals and what we're doing. And at the end of the day, you know, we have this book full of adjectives and not really tastes, just adjectives. Like one of our wines next year is a Pinot Noir that when we went around the table and described it, we said socialite and we said feminine and we said mature and we said all these different, you know, pieces, and we're naming that wine the Misses as opposed to the daughters, and that's how we named it as a family. Each one of our wines, we do that. We talk about the adjectives in which we described it or one of the single things that happened when we were growing it or going through the winemaking process that just stands out to us, and we kind of say it as a group And the family just goes, yeah, that's it.
So do you have a wall? Do you have? Do you use flip charts? Do you do
no.
that?
You
do you
what?
Just write on the wall adjectives?
We do a lot. To be honest with you, it's a lot of being by yourself for only about 5-10 minutes, tasting it, and really, really believing that what you're tasting. We want the label on the outside of our wines to, if you know the story, if you've been here, which is important. I mean, these are not wines that could be sold on a grocery store shelf. Because when you look at it, we can describe the label, and you can almost tell us what it's going to taste like based upon our description, we hope. And that's our goal. And or if we taste the, or if people taste it and we give them a short description of the wine, they say, oh, that's why you did it on the label. And each one of our labels, we hide like 5, 6, 7 different meanings involved, like our 0 and 2. Which
so it's
is
like kind of a Where's Waldo of wine labels,
well,
then?
It's, I guess it's
or
just,
more like those Highlights magazines that we grew up with. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it's that or it's, you know, going back to the music analogy, it's listening to a song and you've heard it so many times and all of a sudden something happens in your life.
All of a sudden you realize there's a little accordion music in the background or a little flute
or
something.
Or just that one little line speaks to you differently than it ever has before, and all of a sudden that song means something to you at that time of your life.
So let me ask you this: do you drink your wines on a regular basis?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, do you love your wine?
I do. I got to be honest.
Because when I've been in here, you always have a glass, right?
Yeah, you know, if it's after 5, absolutely. Previous to 5, family mandate is we can 1 ounce taste just to make sure nothing's bad or bottle shock, but no tasting on site. After 5, then we can enjoy a glass with our friends, of course. But yeah, at home we drink our own wines, and to be honest with you, we drink a lot of wines from around the valley to see the personality of the person who made the wine in the liquid, in the wine. Because you can almost taste people's tastes by the wines they make.
So again, if you're just joining us, and we're going to wrap up here in a couple of minutes, but we are at Sarlo's and Sons family. It's family winery, right? Is that what you say? That's the whole name of the
well, it's Sarlo's and Sons family farming operation, vineyards, wine.
Et cetera, et cetera. And cupcakes, too. And we're in Los Olivos at one of the absolute best tasting rooms you'll ever go to. So please take my recommendation. You need to get in the car and come over here today. Come here on your visit to the Valley. And if you live here in the Valley, come here anyway, because this is, you will discover something wonderful in your own hometown. And I wanted to ask you, there have been some articles written lately about how in the wine industry, the upper-end wines are starting to suffer in sales. And, of course, if you go to the Napa Valley, you will find that the price of wines are considerably higher than they are from the Santa Ynez Valley. Do you benefit from that? I mean, does the valley as a whole? Because the price difference is probably, what, 30, 40% different at least?
You know, dude, just to be 100% honest with you, I don't know. With not being not selling in stores, by not really knowing what's happening beyond our little tasting room, I have friends up and down that are selling wines, and you know, people come in, if they identify with a wine, a lot of people don't even ask how much it is.
Really? They just want it.
Yeah. And on the other side of it, if someone, you know, if you're price conscious and if you're in the grocery store and you're buying a $95 bottle of wine, I could see that being pretty tough. But if you're out tasting, if you're experiencing wines on a face-to-face level, if you like it, you buy it. If you don't, you don't.
Well, I just want to tell you personally that given the quality of your wines and the limited production, you're way underpriced, okay? You might want to just pump the price up just a little bit there.
But to be honest with you, we keep our prices where they are.
Yeah.
So that every single one of our wines is within reach to any man and woman that come in here. If they find something they like, they can say, yeah, I'll pay that for that. And that's why we sell our wines for the price.
Total number of wines that you make?
Types?
Yes.
Well, we did 6 this year. We're doing 9 next. We're doing 2 single varietal. We're doing a Chardonnay again. We're doing a single varietal Syrah again. And then from there, we're not 100% on all the rest of them. We're trying to take our cues from tradition. Some in France, some in Italy, some in Australia, to be honest with you, some in Napa Valley, some here. And we're just trying to make wines that we want to drink as a family and that we're really proud for you to take home with you and bring to a friend's house, open a bottle, and forget what time it is.
Does somebody come over, family member comes over at Thanksgiving and says, you guys got to try this. We need to make something like this. Does that happen a lot?
Sometimes, but then on other ways, like Shoestring Vineyard, which is Shoestring Wines, which is right there on 246 in Buellton. Bill and Rose Vita Craig, some of their wines, to be honest with you, my father will drink their wine before ours. Not because he doesn't like our wines, but he loves Bill and his wife Rose Vita, and some of the Pinot Grigios that they make, my father loves. Not that we would ever want to, quote unquote, knock Bill off and make a Pinot Grigio, but that's Bill's passion. That's one of the unbelievable wines he makes. We want to celebrate that. Just like we want to take our grapes in, taste them, know what they taste like on the vine, and try to guess what they're going to taste like in a few years by, you know, choice of oak and direction and winemaking style. But at the end of the day, we just want to make the best wine we can from farming our grapes the best way we can.
And so I kind of want to leave the listeners with one thought, and it's this. There is such strong associations between food and the experience that you're having when you eat the food, wine, and the experience that you're having when you drink the wine, even smell, and the experience that you're having when you smell a certain scent. We remember these things from the time that we're kids till the time we go to the grave. And since you can't buy the Sarlo's wines in a grocery store, the only way you're really going to experience them is either somebody's going to take it to a dinner party or you're going to come down to the wine tasting room. And when you come to the wine tasting room, you're absolutely 100% guaranteed to have a fabulous experience that, when you open that bottle of wine at a latter time, is going to be recreated and you're going to remember it. You will never not have a good time with a bottle of your wine. That's fair, right?
That is 100%.
This is like this, if this isn't the happiest place on earth, it's definitely the second happiest place on earth. It's fun to look across and look at everybody. I mean, there's nobody stuffy here. And you know what else is cool? It's noisy in here.
Oh yeah.
And you know how many times have you gone into a tasting room where everybody's behaving themselves like they're in a library? I hate that.
We want you to enjoy our wines in the same context as you're going to bring them home. When people ask us what they would pair this wine with, I usually say good friends. I mean, everybody laughs at this, but you judge your friends on what wine you serve them. It's just 100% true. And when you open a bottle of wine because it means something to you, or it's special to you, or you had a good experience, you know, in the valley, or you fell in love over this wine, or whatever it is, you want to run back to that. You want to open it, and you want to, you know, play it for your friends. And if there's one way we want our wine to be enjoyed, that's it.
You just kind of gave me the chills just now.
Excellent.
You want to learn more about it, go to the website, which is
sarlosandsons.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook. And we are also on Twitter at sarlosandsons. And that's spelled S as in Sam, A-A-R-L-O-O, S as in Sam, A-N-D, Sons, S-O-N-S.
Now, if I go on Facebook and I find you and I make a friend, then I will now have access to all these friends of yours.
Absolutely.
Who are the best winemakers in the world.
Oh, yeah. I'd throw a fist for one of these guys if somebody said they weren't. I mean, let's be honest. Bottom line, these guys are the guys that are making this valley important. They're the guys that get up every morning and grab the paintbrush, or grab the welding torch, or grab the punchdown rod.
Yeah.
And get up and go to work every morning. And not because this valley is an easy place to live, but this is where they want to make their mark. They want to work really hard, and they want people to judge them based upon the content of their character, as well as the wines and work that they do with their hands.
Totally cool. Enough said.
Thanks, man.
Keith, thank you so much for being here. It's been so much fun, and I am definitely going to spend more of the day here tasting wines, and I thank you so much. We are leaving now. It's Grape Encounters of the Wine Kind. We've been at Sarlo's Winery in Los Olivos at the wine tasting room. Absolutely fabulous. Keith Sarlo's has been here. Thanks, Keith. I really appreciate it.
Thank you guys so very much.
Come on down. We will talk to you next week at the same time when we'll take you on another wine adventure here in the Santa Ynez Valley. That's it for now. David Wilson saying goodbye. Talk to you next week. Bye.